Welcome to another episode of Teaching Restored, where we are your weekly teacher council meetings, and we focus on the how of teaching the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Julie Hilliard, and I'm really excited about today's topic. We're going to discuss something that is a little bit selfishly motivated for me.
Oh, really? Okay. We're selfish today. Excellent.
I'm going to be selfish.
We're all for that. And
I'm hoping that some of what we discuss will actually give me some insights.
Okay.
So let me tell you where my brain is, if that's all right. So by the time this podcast airs, I will have been released from a teaching calling that I've had for almost 9 years. Oh, like I'm so sad.
I bet you are.
Oh, it's just so good. I've just loved it. I love the people that I teach, and we've become like a family.
Yeah.
And like the culture of that class is just phenomenal. So I have a new calling, and my new calling is to be on the Communication Council for the Stake. And specifically, I'm responsible for community outreach, or that's my focus. And as I've kind of come to understand what that means a little bit, what I feel like is I'm in a new teaching calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I've been called on a mission a little bit, because my job is to reach out to, you know, people who might be, you know, have a little bit more influence in our community. For example, political leaders, educators, council members, opinion leaders is what they call them. And I'm thinking about like the members of the stake who are going to be reaching out to others in their individual circles and in their community, because we have a temple coming to our area. It's actually going to be within our stake boundaries. And it's about my 1.5 mile mark on my run is here. It's about 1.75 miles from my house. Like I can run there.
Not too shabby.
Pretty much the greatest thing ever. Let's be honest. And so as I've been thinking about the youth, like the kids going to school and the questions that they're going to get from their friends, especially as the temple starts to go up. And as I think about our stake and the questions that they're going to be getting related to the temple, I've had a thought brewing in my mind. And I'm going to tell you, we're going to begin with the end in mind, and then we're going to backpedal out of it. So the end in mind is, I want us to have a discussion today about the importance of being able to articulate in a simple way doctrinal truths. Okay.
Good. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, actually.
It is. Okay. And you've talked about this before, and that's part of why, like I said, it's a little bit selfishly motivated, because I'm hoping you're going to help me a little bit with some of your insights. Because I think as we assimilate our thoughts, like you in particular might have some insights around this subject. We've talked about the idea, you know, that one of our objectives in teaching is to find simplicity, not on the near side, but on the far side of complexity. And I think that as members of, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we sometimes, I'm choking, all right.
Pause,
we sometimes overcomplicate matters.
Yeah.
And when we go to articulate it to someone, we confuse them, or we just overcomplicate things a little bit. And so I want to figure out how we can, in a very kind of constructive, functional, almost systematic way, talk about how to distill information, big information, into simple information, and some really practical ideas for being able to do that in our own lives. So I want to lead us into it for just a sec. Is that cool?
Let's talk. Sure.
Okay, let's chat. So do you remember last week, Kevin, you brought up the podcast with Dr. Craig Manning?
Yes.
The sports psychologist. And he was on Follow Him. And he said something that was super profound to me about truth. So let's talk about the context really fast. Take out your scriptures. We're going to read in 1 Nephi for just a second.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about why he was tackling this topic of truth and talking about it in this context by reading about what's going on, which is, oh no, exactly what's going on right now.
Imagine that.
How ironic.
Shocker. I know.
So bust open 3 Nephi chapter 1, and let's read verse 22, and then we're going to turn over to chapter 2. So do you want to read that?
Third Nephi, chapter 1. Verse what, sorry?
22.
Okay. And it came to pass from this time.
Christ is about to come. I'm okay. Just giving context.
There we go.
So like, this is what's happening right before. And like, remember that they're like waiting for the signs that Samuel the Ammonite prophesied under the threat of death. Dun,
dun. And destruction.
So, okay. Sorry, I just give context. Okay, go.
Thank you. And it came to pass from this time forth, there began to be lyings sent forth among the people by Satan to harden their hearts to the intent that they might not believe in those signs and wonders which they had seen. But notwithstanding these lyings and deceivings, the more part of the people did believe and were converted unto the Lord.
What is the difference between those who believed and those who did not? Let's go to another scripture.
Okay.
Chapter 2. Let's read verses 1 and actually let's go 1 through 3. You do one, I'll do 2, you do 3.
Okay.
Just to change it up.
Sounds good. That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Again, and it came to pass, thus passed away the 95th year also, and the people began to forget those signs and wonders which they had heard, and began to be less and less astonished at a sign or wonder from heaven, insomuch that they began to be hard in their hearts and blind in their minds, and began to disbelieve all which they had heard and seen.
Holy cow, that's not good. And not only did they start to disbelieve all of these things that they had actually heard and seen, meaning they'd had an experience with, but they actually started to imagine up some vain thing in their heart. They started kind of explaining it away or writing stories about it, right? That was wrought by men by the power of the devil to lead away the doctrine, to lead away and deceive the hearts of the people. And thus did Satan get possession of the hearts of the people again, insomuch that he did blind their eyes and lead them away to believe that the doctrine of Christ was a foolish and a vain thing.
Dude, oh, my turn. That's right. Oh, that's my turn. I'm thinking, I'm thinking about these different things. Oh, yes. Okay. I shall continue to read. Here we go. And it came to pass that the people began to wax strong in wickedness and abominations. And they did not believe that there should be any more signs or wonders given. And Satan did go about, leading away the hearts of the people, tempting them and causing them that they should do great wickedness in the land.
Okay, so let's kind of try and organize this just a little bit.
All right.
What are some of the things that are happening and that's relatable to us, right? Mm-hmm. And what is the difference between those who remain believers and those who become unbelievers or who are deceived or who fall prey to some of these strategies of Satan?
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
So as I read verse 2, I pictured in my mind that there's kind of a funnel here, kind of a filtering out. And let's see, it says, the people began to forget the signs and wonders which they had heard. Now, when I've read that in the past, I took that, I think, incorrectly. I think it was, they saw signs and wonders. No, they actually heard they forgot the signs and wonders which they had heard. So I'm understanding that now to mean prophesied, which they had heard prophesied to them, right?
Okay.
And so the people, so before even the signs and wonders happened, they had the prophecy of these are the signs and wonders, and then they forgot about them. So that when the signs and wonders came, it was like, not a bit. I mean, yeah, okay. That's not actually a sign of wonder. That's just something that happened. Forgetting that, no. Prophet so-and-so actually said that was going to happen and this is the way it was going to happen. So that when they came, they weren't amazed by it.
Right.
So that kind of, for me, in this little bit, is the linchpin that if we're forgetting that they were even spoken or prophesied of, then it's really easy to not be amazed by what's happening and just take it as part of life.
So I kind of hear you talking about a process a little bit. Like, so they hear some things that are prophesied about, and then they kind of are like, oh, well, whatevs, you know, kind of, or they start to forget a little bit about them. But then like, look at this process and how it kind of goes. It's like, you know, their heart started to get a little bit hard. They're like, not sure about that. Go to like the, in verse one of chapter two, this is the part. They began to be less and less astonished. Right? And then they begin to disbelieve. And then they write up a different story about it, right? And they try and explain it away. And then next thing you know, they can't see it. They can't hear it. And they're like, peace out, doing other stuff.
Right.
So why, like, if you look back at verse 22 of chapter one, it says the more part of the people did believe. So think, those aren't the people that are being led away to do these wicked things by Satan. So what is the difference between those that Satan was able to catch hold of and those that were able to stay rooted? Because they were experiencing the same things. They were hearing the same prophecies. They were living in the same, like, area. And I think that this is happening right now. Like, we can be living in the same area. We're listening to the same general conference or whatever. And yet there are people that are choosing to stay and there are people that are choosing to leave. What is the difference? And so let me kind of tell you a little bit about what he said about truth.
Okay.
Talk about the idea that a lot of society right now is living in fight or flight mode. We are operating from a place of fear. And what happens to the brain when we're operating from a place of fear is that it functions differently. Like, I think about, you know, our higher functioning and reasoning being kind of in this prefrontal cortex, where a lot of the other stuff, like the self-preservation and being in survival mode, is stuff that's happening back in your amygdala, which is lower on the brainstem. And so if we kind of experience things or process moving up the brain, I'm doing a very lovely little hand gesture across my own noggin. But if we function kind of in that way, when we're in fight or flight or survival mode, it is our lower brain function only. We're not capable of higher reasoning. And so part of what he's saying is that Satan is real. Part of what Dr. Manning said is that Satan has a lot of power if he can keep people in a place of fear. And if he can keep people in this kind of fight or flight mode where they're operating from a place of fear. So tell me, Kevin, and I know you listen to this podcast, so you can just kind of pull it from that, or you can tell me your own thoughts, but what happens to you when you are operating from a place of fear? What's your behavior like?
I kind of see it as a defense mode. I go into defense instead of offense. I start thinking, okay, how do I avoid? What can I do to mitigate? What can I do to make sure something doesn't happen or the negative effects doesn't happen, rather than there it's just more of a reaction, and I've got to try to get away, the fight or flight, right? You can fight it and say, okay, well, forget that. And you're so focused on it that you forget everything else. And when we aren't living in that, we're more on offense and we're more proactive and we're more creative, I would say, and kind of reaching outside of ourselves. Fight or flight is all about us, all about ourselves.
Okay. So reactive versus proactive, self-centered versus able to see outside of yourself. Those are two of the big things I heard in what you said, right?
Yes.
I also think that part of it is that we try and control more around us. So I think that when we're in fight or flight more, we are more inclined to imagine up some vain thing in our hearts. We're more inclined to write stories, to explain things, because we feel like we have more control over something when we have an explanation for it. And so we might actually extrapolate information or selectively hear things so that we can write a story that makes us feel the most safe and the most comfortable, versus actually hearing everything that we didn't necessarily want to hear. And I think so we start to be more selective in our listening. We start to be more authoritarian in the way that we talk to people because we're trying to control them and subdue them and get control over them. Or we become more like passive and retreating and less capable of having relationships with people. So when you think about that and you think about our role as teachers, if we are coming from a place of fear, tell me how that might play out when you are having a gospel discussion with a child who believes differently than you do, a group of youth who challenge you, a group of adults where someone says that they know more than you and they raise their hand in class and just keep kind of disagreeing with you, a member of the community who tells you all of the bad stuff that they've heard about the church. So as a teacher, if you are in survival mode and you feel the need to control things, tell me a little bit about what that experience ends up looking like.
I can see for me, that would be, I would be in approving mode.
Okay, that's good.
I would try to prove and control things by trying to prove that something is true, that something is more correct than another, that it is, this is, that this is reality compared to what you think is reality. No, right. It is this way. So I'm trying to control and prove the whole thing rather than almost have a discussion with and understand rather than, and proving, I really don't care what they're saying. I'm just trying to get my point across, right? And then in the opposite, I want to know their perspective. I want to understand them, but I'm proving I don't. I just want to say, no, this is it, and here's how I prove it.
That is so good. We are in proving mode. I think that that's a defensive strategy, right?
Yes.
And so going into proving mode, it's almost like you think about some of the phrases that are used here. We become unable to hear. We become blind in our eyes. We become, you know, unable to see. We, like, our senses become muted when we're in survival mode. Except actually, when you're in survival mode, your senses become heightened. So that's not totally true. I'm talking about like your mental capacities. Like you cease to be able to listen and you're so intent on getting your point across that it isn't a discussion like you said.
Right.
That's perfect explanation. We kind of go into proving mode. So one of the points that I want to make, because I've experienced this in the past, when I'm having a discussion with someone and I find myself wanting to talk over them, I find myself preparing my reply, I find myself feeling defensive and speaking in a defensive way, or almost feeling the need to speak more passionately about something because, like, in a more authoritarian way almost, or to overstate or to whatever, that needs to be a clue to me that I am operating from a place of fear. Isn't that, I've been there.
Yes, like, I think we all have. Yeah.
Right. I remember this one experience in particular where I was talking to a woman who I absolutely love, but because I was feeling so much enthusiasm about the gospel and her receptivity to it, when she asked me a question about homosexuality and how the church feels about it, I just took data, information, this, and I just started like pummeling her with it, right? Because I wanted to prove that we are not homophobic, that we are not discriminating against people of different sexual orientations, that it's an inclusive church. I was like, prove it. And I felt it in me. And I remember sitting, getting done with that experience, and all I reflected on was content. I didn't reflect at all on whether or not the Spirit had been part of that discussion.
Right.
So now let's flip it on its head. And let's, you kind of alluded to some of these things, but when you aren't operating from a place of fear, what are you operating from?
Simply, I would say the Spirit.
Okay. But what is that? Like, what is you operating with the Spirit? Where does that place you psychologically? If you're not in survival mode.
Well, it's not a selfish mode. It's not a, you know, it's not a point of, I need to prove to you, because I know that in the conversation, if I don't prove anything to that person, that's okay. maybe that's not the point. Maybe the point is not to prove, but maybe it's more, I just need to connect with this person.
More than anything. Your objective changes entirely.
Entirely changes. I would say overall, yes. However, it doesn't preclude that I would want them to understand, but at the same time, I can let that go if it needs to change and to help them, you know, for example, if I'm in a spot where I'm talking with someone who's maybe a little antagonistic or saying, you know, my first thought is, okay, I want to help them understand, you know, right. And in a way we can say that as proof. But at the same time, I may get to the point where, oh, they actually don't want to be proven one way or another. They just want to get whatever's on their chest off of it so they can say whatever they need to. And this is more of a connection time. Okay. And so I'm okay with changing my goal in that conversation.
Okay. So when you talk about, first of all, you said so much. I'm going to try and give a couple. No, it was so good. So one of the words that I would use is that you recognize that they need emotional air when they start being a little bit of antagonistic towards you. And that emotional air thing comes from the example that I've given before, where if you were to suck all of the air out of the room, you're not going to be able to hear anything someone else is saying because all you want is oxygen. And air is to the body what feeling understood is to the heart. And so you give someone emotional oxygen mm-hmm. by seeking to understand them. And then their ears can open. Your ears close when you feel threatened in some way yeah. or when you need emotional air. And so you can switch your objective when you recognize that in someone else. But why can you switch your objective? Like, what gives you the power, the ability, and you're going to say the spirit, but I want to get into this a little bit more. What gives you the ability to say, oh, wait a minute, you need emotional air. Let me give that to you first. How do we get to a place where we have that much confidence?
Okay. You just asked two different questions, at least the way I see.
I asked a lot of questions. I was just talking and talking and talking. And
so okay. What gives me the ability? I would say perspective.
Okay.
Because when we are in fight or flight mode, when we're in proving mode, there is really only one perspective, and that is from a self-centered perspective. But when we have the ability to step out of that and have different perspectives and look at, and maybe not even, you know, I took an ethnographic class one time for my master's and
what class?
An ethnographic class.
What's an ethnographic class?
So basically, instead of going in and saying, okay, I'm going to prove a point here, you know, I'm going to go in and in this context, it was organizational design and development and going and figuring out, okay, well, I think the problem is this and going and attacking that. It's going in and saying, give it, I don't know what to think. I have no idea. Tell me what's going on. And from all that input, then you can make something without going in again, without a preconceived idea.
That's interesting.
And so almost I can go in with different perspectives with that point of view of, I wonder where they're coming from.
So curiosity,
okay. a sense of discovery at the same time.
So again, though, how come you can do that? Like, this is the thing. This is the thing.
Because I ate a good breakfast.
Because you ate your Wheaties. Okay.
That's right.
All of that is good. The point that he made, this was so powerful to me. I'm just going to spew it out and tell, because everything you're saying is going to prove this point, but it was so powerful to me. He said that to get out of survival mode and into a place where we thrive, the difference is truth.
Okay.
Understand truth, we feel the fruit of that is confidence, and the fruit of it is also humility. And so this is how I kind of pictured it. I'm like, if I, for example, here I am in this new role and I need to, let's say I'm going to go stand before this community leader and I'm going to talk to him as a representative of the Vancouver East Stake. And I am like, how am I not going to pee my pants? How am I not going to freak out? And how am I not going to get defensive if I start hearing all of these things about our church that aren't favorable? How am I going to stand in a place of confidence? And it's truth. So I thought, wait a minute. Okay. So what does that mean for me? And I realized that I need to be able to become so rooted in truth that it doesn't matter what someone throws at me, that I can just stand in a place of confidence. And so now, fast forward this week. So I've been mulling over this, right?
Okay.
So I do consulting in a couple of different dental practices. And one of the things that I do is I help them to navigate difficult conversations that they need to have. And there was a conversation that needed to take place with this father who was really, really upset about something. And he had lambasted in a rude, irrational way, one of our colleagues, somebody that we had referred to him. And it was really interesting because she came to me and she's like, she just rolled over and played dead. She was responding to him. They'd had a verbal conversation. He'd written her this email and threatened her in the email, like with legal suits and things like that. And so I got on the phone with her and we're talking about it. And she had crafted this email that she wanted me to approve. And I was like, no way, because she just rolled over and played dead. And so I said to her, cause she just didn't want the threats. She's like, forget it. You can just have it, whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. You're right. I'm so sorry. And, it was like this podcast was in my brain and I'm like, what is right? And she told me, and I'm like, then you can stand confident in this place of what is right. You don't need to worry about what he's throwing at you at all. And so we rewrote the email. And it just stated truth. And then Dr. Manning calls it data points. He when he does recruiting for the MBA, he's like, I'll go in and I'll give, you know, the coach or whoever, you know, data points about these players. And he's like, then I'm really confident based on these data points, you know, that I'm making a good recommendation. Well, similarly, you know, we talk about the fact that faith is reason and substance and all of these things. We have data points when it comes to truths of the gospel. And when we come to understand truth, we can stand confident and we don't need to worry about what's being thrown at us. And so she was able to take the bullets because she's like, you're right. I know I'm a good professional. I am good at my job. And she's like, and this is the right thing. And then she was calm and could face like all of the lambasting and everything else. And I'm like, that is so powerful. And if you think about it, when it comes to us, like that is so powerful. Mm-hmm. So do you have any comments on that whole idea of what truth gifts us with in terms of confidence?
Actually, I have a question for you and maybe you can. So I'm thinking back to your example of where you're talking to your friend. And you just went blah on her, right? You have truth. You were explaining how the church feels and et cetera, et cetera. It was truth, but you still went blah, right? And you're in proving mode, right? So what's the difference there?
You know why? Because why? I didn't understand it yet myself. Oh. Like, honestly, I didn't. Okay. I still struggle. Like, I feel defensive of some of those. Like, I'm still wrestling with that. I've come to a place where I have studied personally, and I specifically have a friend who is transgender who has helped me a lot in my kind of testimony and conclusions about how I feel and how that meshes with what I understand about the Savior Jesus Christ and God, our eternal Father. Mm-hmm. And so I have done a lot of work to get to that point. And I would address it so differently now. I didn't then. And there are still things about the gospel where it's like that for me.
Sure. That's good. Thank you. That makes sense.
So I think that's so if I'm being super vulnerable, that's what I'm afraid of in this new calling. Mm. I'm afraid not of what I don't know, but what I don't know.
No, in the heart. Yes.
Yes. I guess that's right. Most people aren't watching this. They're listening. Mm-hmm. So I pointed to my head what I don't. It's not what I don't intellectually have in my brain, but it's what I don't yet have a firm, solid testimony of, to the point where I can stand totally confident in front of someone and take whatever it is and testify of truth.
I love it.
And that scares me.
Yeah. There, I don't know if you've seen these videos. Every now and then I will go watch these videos on purpose, where the videos mm-hmm. are people who have unkind feelings toward the church or mm-hmm. things against the church. In some way, or it's, you know, that preacher on the street corner who stopped two missionaries and start talking to them. And, yep. and putting it in this context, it's really interesting because a lot of times they are just in both sides are in the proving and they're just yep. going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Right. Mm-hmm. But there have been many times when instead of the proving, it's just maybe a testimony, or maybe mm-hmm. they have experienced. And I think that's a lot of what it is the experience, which is why so much of trying to, and maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but trying to talk about things very simply, when you have mm-hmm. the experience, it's so much easier.
Totally agree.
To explain things more simply than it is, this is what I read, or this is what I've seen happen, or this is what the handbook says, or this, you know, all these different things. If we read these, that's great. But if we have experienced it, it's hard to, well, number one, it's hard to disprove what you have experienced. Number two, you've been able to somewhat go through it and explain it in your head, how you feel already. And it comes mm-hmm. out very, very differently, very much more simply.
So you're making a really good point. And I want to, like, let's twist it just a little bit. Okay. Because what I hear you saying in summary is that it is so much easier to have a confident conversation when you have an experience with a principle yourself. And it's so much easier to distill it and make it simple because you've had an experience. So I would say that it's truth that you are confident in when you've had an experience with it. I'm just to use Dr. Mm-hmm. Manning's word. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to have that with every principle of the gospel. Like we are works in progress. And so you can't expect to know everything about everything. Here's something so interesting, though, because, like, we do what chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 are talking about, and we start to even twist our own experiences in our own mind sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we start to kind of, you know, yeah. imagine that things are actually different than they are. And Satan literally is trying to, like, you know, send forth these lying things that get us to, like, harden our hearts and to try and get us to disbelieve. And so it's not like just because we've had an experience with something, we're now, check, I'm good in that area at all. And so, like, that's where your point about the Spirit becomes such a hugely important component of this, is that not only is it easier if we've had an experience with it, but it's also so much easier when the Spirit can bring to, like, inform our memories and inform right. our ability to
yes.
tell that in a way that will land with them. So this is kind of an ongoing wrestle for me. So let me kind of push us forward just a little bit to see if we can kind of figure out just a little bit more. So when we talk about being able to stand with confidence, if we understand truth, I want to just point out one more thing, that the fruit of that is not that we will be more capable of proving that truth. The fruit of that is that we're actually more humble.
I like that.
Does that feel ironic almost?
That does, but I'll tell you, I used to think that though. I used to think that if I understand the gospel better, I can prove it more.
Right.
And a lot of times that was the goal, it's to prove it.
Right.
And that may be kind of a side goal. That may be a good, you know, if that was the best thing for it at the same time, but that's, you know, am I going to be successful? That would be a measurement of it, is the proving, right? But no, it's right. Yeah, we become humble once we start to really understand the truth. From the head to the heart, we understand it.
Exactly. So think about then the contrast between the need to prove and how we get more authoritarian, or how we sometimes retreat and get more passive, or whatever, when we're operating from a place of fear, versus when we are operating with truth as our foundation and we're operating from a place of confidence. What then does it look like when we say you become more humble? Mm. How does that play out? What does that actually look like?
I want to give an example, and this is not to say I am humble. Okay. But
this if you say you are, you aren't.
Right. That's exactly it. But this kind of illustrates what we're talking about to a degree. And I think I may have mentioned this in a previous episode a long time ago, but there was, when we lived in Alabama, I went to lunch a few times with someone who got his doctorate degree in the dialect of Greek that the Old Testament or New Testament was written in. And it was all based on the New Testament. And right. And so he knew it inside and out so much better than I did. And so we went to lunch, and it wasn't to prove anything to each other, but it was more to understand where we were each coming from. Why do you believe this? Why do you believe this? And right. It was such great conversations, really, really good conversations. Some of it was proving. You would say, you know, well, actually the dialect of Greek says this specific thing. It doesn't even mention that. And so that's actually not what it is. And okay, that's good to know. And so we would go through a number of things, but a lot of it was, I take away this and our feelings and our testimony. And then in the end, he said, so do you think all Mormons are going to heaven? And I said, no. And he said, do you think people who are not Mormon will get to heaven? And I said, yes. And then I asked him, do you think me being Mormon, do you think I'm going to hell? And he said, yes. And I'm like, okay. All right, good. Done. Right. I mean, I'm not there to prove anything. I'm going to heaven. That's, you know, it was okay. I appreciate you being honest about that. And he truly felt that I was going to hell. And yet he was still having lunches and conversations with me. Right. I thought that was pretty cool, but it wasn't.
That is so cool because, oh, Kevin, you just said like 10 things. So Sorry, I didn't mean to. Like, so back up into your conversation, like,
yeah.
The fruit of you being confident and going, like, you were able to be almost collaborative with him. Yeah, like, you were able to have a discussion where you had this genuine curiosity that you talked about, and the perspective that you talked about a little bit earlier. Those are the fruits of you understanding truth enough to just kind of stand in it confidently and not feel the need to unravel his truth. But then when he would tell you something, so this is another thing you brought out, when he would share something with you and almost correct you, it wasn't threatening to you.
Right.
In fact, you're like, oh, cool. You were almost flexible in your understanding because you understood it.
Right.
Like, wait, you became more flexible? Yeah.
Unpack that one.
But really, that's absolutely the truth. Yeah. Like, you become, like, maybe I don't totally understand things perfectly. And that's not threatening to you to admit that. And it doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden going to convert to his faith because he's unraveled something that you thought you understood. And you now, oh, wait, maybe I stand corrected. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the last part, when he told you you're going to hell, you're like, cool. Didn't even,
There's no, yeah, it didn't faze me.
Well, and the other cool thing about it is that it didn't faze him to tell you that.
I know it. He was just straight up about it.
Because, I mean, so who's right? Is his truth right or is your truth right? Doesn't matter. What matters is that you are both standing in a place of confidence that gave you the ability to listen, to hear, to collaborate, to enlighten, to grow together. That's the fruit of thriving mode versus survival mode.
Yeah.
So when you think about Zion and what Zion's supposed to look like, it says one heart, one mind. It doesn't mean we're all going to think the same. It means we're all focused on the same things. And we might understand it differently.
Yeah.
And the cool part about it is that when we come from a place of truth and stand confidently in that truth, we can think differently and still feel great. And we feel more flexible and more, I want to say, like, when it comes to being receptive, yeah, more receptive to the spirit. We're more open versus closed off. It literally is the opposite of what you would expect when you have more knowledge and more truth.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That is. Because if you have more knowledge and more truth, you could almost, I mean, I think of, oh boy, someone like Jordan Peterson or someone who just knows a whole bunch of facts, right? Who can just say, well, actually it's this way and this way and this way and this way. And you go, oh my goodness gracious. Right. Wow. Blow me away with all these facts. And that's the way it really is. That rarely actually works.
Right.
It isn't that.
Yeah.
And you're right. So sometimes that type of knowledge and truth, quote, air quote, truth, then makes things more difficult. But when we have those bits of truth in us and we are more calm, and it isn't a place of proving anymore.
Well, and so that's kind of what you described with this, all of this knowledge, and you can rattle it off and, you know, you're really good at all of those things. I think that arrogance with that and like shoving it down people's throats and stuff should be an indication to us that we are operating from a place of fear.
Yeah. Good point.
And now, and so
at the same time, it's not bad to know that. And
no.
To be able to use that and to have that all in our heads. I think that's actually really, really good to have that. It's just that we don't have to bring it up. It doesn't have to be there every single time to prove it.
There's a Margaret Thatcher quote. It's one of my favorites. She said that being powerful is like being a lady. If you have to tell people you are, you aren't. Right. Right? Like, I mean, that's kind of what you're describing.
Yeah, that I like that.
If you're knowledgeable, you don't have anything to prove. Mm-hmm. If you are rooted in truth, you don't have anything to prove because you're rooted. Mm-hmm. And an indication to us that we have some work to do is our insecurity, is our kind of arrogance, our lack of humility. Yeah. Like those are indications that we have work to do, right? Okay, so let me take this to the point that I wanted to make. And I know this feels like a long way to get there, but I'm hoping that this will really land well now that we've kind of taken that journey. So my goal with that insight is to get to the point where I feel really confident talking about different principles of the gospel. There is always space for, I'm not sure, I don't know. But even that doesn't feel threatening when you are rooted in a testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so how do we get there? What are some practical things that we can do? We brought a few up, but I want to like list them right now. What are some practical things that we can do to get to the point where not only we feel rooted in it, but we can also help others as a fruit of our discussions in class, as a fruit of our discussions in our home, et cetera, feel confident sharing principles of the gospel because they become rooted in it as well.
Okay.
So
I like this.
Let's talk practical.
Okay. So I have an answer for, I saw that as kind of a two part. I have it. And an answer for both of those, at least not the answer, but an answer.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. We would never claim to know everything, or we would be doing the exact opposite of what we're talking about.
Exactly. So the first thing that, as you were describing this, that I thought of was, teaching in the Savior's way. There we go. Yep. Teaching in the Savior's way. And any other time they talk about being a good teacher, and we've mentioned this on this podcast before, they don't talk about what you can do as a teacher.
Right.
They talk about your testimony and you diving into the scriptures and you praying and your connection with the divine. And that, I think, is probably the most important thing. We can learn all the facts. We can learn all the figures. We can learn the content. That will never substitute for us understanding. And then not only just understanding it, but like you said earlier, from your head to your heart, how do you experience it? When you have those experiences, then you can go from a place of confidence. So that's one bit. And then the other bit, that's right. When we are talking with our friends about the mm-hmm. gospel, what comes to mind is a talk that Elder, I'm almost positive it's M. Russell Ballard gave years ago. And he said something along the lines of, when someone says, tell me a little bit about your church, we may be tempted to talk about how many temples we have and how much aid we are giving to people, and then how missionary efforts, and just go on and on and on about family home evening, and then we have the Word of Wisdom, and then we have the Book of Mormon, and keep going to this, right? And he says no, and he said it's good to know those facts and it's good to understand that, but then it's really what are they trying to do? What are they trying to understand? So if we understand what they are looking for, we can help them with that one thing. And it may not even be a fact that they're really searching for. It may just, like I mentioned earlier, I need to talk about this. I need to get this off my shoulder. Yeah. Because I've heard this, and that's horrible. At least from their perspective. Oh, that's horrible. I can't believe you guys do that. Right. Yeah. But I think we need to understand where they're coming from and then us respond appropriately and help them. The way I look at it is I try to help them with the next step, and that's it. Five steps later too.
So let me go backwards with what you said and respond to a couple of things. So when we're talking about helping people figure out how to teach it, what I heard you say is that we need to be asking them more what they need to understand, right, what they're struggling with. So it's this whole concept of seeking first to understand. Mm-hmm. So we're in a class and we're the teacher and we're having a conversation about, say, the priesthood. And you, instead of just diving in and teaching all of these things about the priesthood, mm-hmm. maybe a strategy would be to say, what questions do you have about the priesthood? What are some of the things that you struggle with? What are the things that you wrestle with? What are some of the gaps in your knowledge and understanding? And maybe start by asking that, because part of what we're trying to do is help strengthen people's testimonies. And so let's talk obstacles before we talk content, because we're never going to get through the priesthood as a broad topic, right? So you're saying kind of hone your discussions to meet needs. Right. And you can do that by leading a discussion backwards.
Right.
Like, what do you want to talk about first?
Yeah. And I think sometimes those needs aren't even a particular topic. It's just the need. Sometimes the need for some people is to understand. So they have a roadblock in front of them and all they see is this roadblock. Well, you could try to disprove this roadblock and break it down, or you can give just humble, loving, maybe alternatives or something that would put a crack in the wall. And all they need to see is the light. They don't need the whole thing torn down. All they need to see is there's a crack in there. There may be actually something there that gives them the motivation to go out themselves and tear down the wall themselves, which, is a lot better for them in a way, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not in any way. When you started to say that, I was like, oh, I think I sounded like I was suggesting that we go after disproving negatives.
Oh, no. I didn't think that you said that. No. Oh.
Well, but to be clear, that's not what we're suggesting at all.
Correct.
But I think that what we are suggesting is let's figure out what the stumbling blocks are. And then when we teach truth, we make sure that we either address it or, so here's another point. This isn't super organized, I'm sorry. But backing up just a little bit, this idea of seeking first to understand, making sure that you figure out what they need, that's a huge part. I love that strategy when we're teaching. So another thing that, I hope I can articulate this. Let me try. So back to the experience that I related a little bit earlier, where I talked about the idea that I have a friend who's transgender that really helped me to become rooted in my testimony as it relates to that and kind of simplify all of the complexities of it in my own personal mind because of my own personal experience. The learning that I came out of that with, I think, is really applicable here. And that is that sometimes it's not about the topic at all. Sometimes it is, for me at least, in the case of gender and sexuality issues, it's about the nature of God. And so when I think about the nature of God and I focus on what I know about our loving Heavenly Father and our Savior Jesus Christ, that there settles my heart. And I'm not going into the specifics, but there are specifics related to that.
Okay.
So the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes it's not about the obstacle, but we can start to sense, well, this obstacle exists. We don't have answers. What do we know that would help us settle the issue? Does it have to do in this case with what do I understand about the nature of God? Does my understanding of this subject, is it at odds with the nature of God? Well, then is the nature of God wrong? Is my understanding of the nature of God wrong? Or is this thing wrong that I don't understand? Well, maybe I can set the thing aside and say, I don't understand this correctly because it doesn't align with something that I am very confident about. And that's part of what I think we can do. So that's another strategy.
That's good. Yeah.
Figuring out, back it up a little bit. What are we tripping on? What are we not sure about? Well, what are we sure about? And how does that help us make sense of what we aren't sure about? Does that make sense?
So let me paraphrase that in a way, if I could, just to put it in my mind, maybe, and you tell me if I have this right.
Okay.
In a way, what you're saying is when you're having those discussions, kind of going back a step. For example, they ask this question, and maybe what they're trying to get at is not exactly that question. Mm-hmm. It's something before that. So we have to back up to before the question. You even mentioned this earlier of, well, why, what are your thoughts around this? I know asking the questions first. And mm-hmm. So we need to, again, I'm not formulating this very well either, but trying to get in and understand the root of the question and maybe you don't even have to solve or address the question itself, but we're getting to the root of it first and then dealing with that. Am I getting there?
Yes and no. Okay. So let me, because what I think I heard you do is take it from the other person's perspective. So me as a teacher trying to answer, well, what the strategy is that I might, back up and say, well, figure it out. Let's take two steps back. And we do that in a way by asking them questions and saying, well, what do you believe? And then we start to understand a little bit more about that. And then we can kind of get to what it actually is, mm-hmm. or what we do know, where we have a common place, and then we can build on that. What I'm talking about is me in my preparation and my understanding, so that I can stand confident and be rooted in truth, even about things that I don't totally understand, that I need to do that personally.
Okay.
That I need to say, this doesn't sit well with me. I'm going to try and understand it. I can get more information, but I'm still going to go bleh if I have to have a conversation with somebody about it. And I'm going to bring them all the information that I've read and dialed into in order for me to truly feel calm and humble and confident about something that I really don't know.
Gotcha.
I need to go back and say, what do I know? And I might actually be so bold as to say that in, you know, the case of my calling, for example, I have no clue what questions I'm going to get from people. I have no clue what their issues with the church are. Nothing. So it's like, could I perfectly understand every topic going into that? And, oh, I've had an experience with this. And right. There's no possible way. But what do I know that is at the core of all of the doctrine of the gospel of Jesus Christ? I know my Savior lives, right? And I know his nature. I know he loves everyone. And I know he invites everyone to come unto him. And I know he wants everyone back, right? And I know that he only does the will of God the Father. And so they are united in that purpose. And that we know God the Father as we come to know him better and vice versa. Like that I know those things. And so if there is something about even what people might hear or even about the actual doctrine of the gospel of Jesus Christ, can I still stand confident and be humble? Yeah, because I can go back to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Getting back to your solid foundation.
Yes.
Right.
And so that's part of what I would say is a strategy for this.
Yes.
Right. That we get back to where we are solid and we build from there.
Good. Right. I like that.
Because we have another suggestion. So that is like in the case of a temple coming. Right. And this goes to, you've made this point already, but I'm going to like enforce it again. Okay. That in the case of the temple coming, I'm like, how am I going to learn to talk about the temple? What's all the information about the temple that I need to know? What types of questions might people be asking? Go to the temple, Julie. Right? That's kind of what I keep doing.
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
And so sometimes we get so caught up in like, I'm going to go study about all of this stuff. Or I could go to the temple. You know? Oh, let me go study about prayer. Maybe I should say my prayers. Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's another suggestion.
So in a way, not in a way, I think rather than just studying the books and facts, you are experiencing it.
That's exactly what you were saying earlier. That is me trying to reiterate that. Exactly.
Go, yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. Love that. And it is so simple. Just go to the temple.
Yeah.
Well, that was a tough one.
Good job, me. Yeah. And we've made a few suggestions. They've been a little bit disorganized. They're not in a sequence. I can't write them down in a list for you or anything like that. But let me summarize the point, if that's okay.
Yes.
All of this to me and my big epiphany was that I don't have to have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I can and I will stand confident in who my Savior Jesus Christ is and whose work we are doing. And if I can stand confident there, it really doesn't matter what other people throw at me. And so if I am feeling weak or if I am feeling insecure, my job is to lean into that truth. My job is to lean into that relationship. My job is to wrestle with it. My job is to try and have more experiences with it. My job is not to work to prove it to everybody else. And so I just encourage all of us, if we find ourselves feeling insecure, if we find ourselves being more aggressive or retreating more or trying to control everybody else's narrative more, and even in the classroom setting, this is sometimes true. Like we start to feel insecure. And so we try to control the narrative a little bit more and make it a little bit more like, ooh, I'm comfortable with that. I'm a little uncomfortable with that. We got to work on us. go back to you, and you get to the point where you can feel like, no, man, I'm solid in this. I can stand confident right here because of what I have experienced and what I feel in my heart. That's the point.
I love it. And you made that point so perfectly. Thank you. That's so good. So I am going to go where I'm taking from this. I am going to go work on kind of going back. So my action item for this, I'm going to go back and I'm going to say, okay, what, and label, what do I know for certain? What do I, what is my root? You know, how far out does that go from the root, and how solid is that? Where does that end? And where do I start going, yeah, I'm starting to get tripped up here. Mm-hmm. And then go experience it. If it's at the temple, then go to the temple, like you said. If it's with something, maybe missionary work, then I'm going to go maybe out with the missionaries.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
Or if it's around some of the more difficult topics that the church may have, whatever. Let's go experience that so that we can, from our place. Because one of the things I was just thinking of is that if we experience it too far away from our root, we may have an incorrect understanding. So it needs mm-hmm. to be next to the root of what we do are solid in. Would you agree?
I would say that what you just said is key. We have to be building from the root, not jumping to the issue. Build from the root to get to the issue.
That's good.
Is that?
Yeah, that's spot of exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Julie. I learned so much in this. I like this. I may have to, again, I don't listen to all of our podcasts again, but this is one I may have to go back and listen to and pull some things out, especially as we have a temple coming. That is,
we're so lucky.
We are very excited for that. Yes.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you very much, Julie. Everyone, if you would share, like, subscribe, comment, and let us know what you're struggling with. Thank you very much for watching and listening. See you next time.